You're listening to a recorded talk from Greenbelt Festival.
So, this is after the riots, building trust in a time of polarization. Some of you might have come here specifically for that because you're interested in it. Yeah. Give me a wave if some of you have come here specifically for that. Wonderful. Okay, great. Some of you might be here because we just want a warming cup of tea or coffee and something to eat. That's absolutely fine. Others of you may have come to do other things as well. You're already welcome. So my name is Jonathan Cox. I'm the Deputy Director at Citizens UK. We got any people who are involved in Citizens here? Okay. Three or four of you. Fantastic. We might ask you to get a bit involved later, along with everybody else. This is going to be a bit of an interactive session. This is one of three that we've run with the Joint Public Issues team. And we're looking at some particular skills we can use in our communities afterwards. But before we go any further, I want to introduce my co-host. Can we give a warm Greenbelt round of applause to Alison Webster?
Thank you. Great to be here. I must warn you, it may not be raining outside, but it is occasionally raining inside. So just be prepared for just a little shower of cold water off the roof. It's happened to me twice. So don't say you don't get a free shower at Greenbelt.
Thanks, Alison. Alison, do you want to tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Okay, so I'm Alison Webster. I work with Citizens in a part-time capacity, building a community of practice amongst people who are involved in community organising through their church. So that's a cross-denominational, multifaceted group of people who are passionate about building community where they are and are wanting to reflect theologically on what it means to do organising in communities for social change as a spiritual practice.
Fantastic. So if you're interested in that, come and see us on the stall. We've got Citizens UK stall in the takeaway section. I'll just run through the agenda of what we're going to do, and then I think you're going to do some introductions, aren't you, Alison? So what we're going to do is most of the time is going to be spent on a practical exercise called a weaving trust. Has anybody been involved in a weaving trust before? No, so you're all going to experience, if you want to be involved in it, something new. Just to whet your appetite for it, it's going to be a bit like a cross between non-romantic speed dating and a barn dance or a Kaylee, okay? You'll see or not see whether it works or not by the end of the session. So we're going to be doing that here for most of the session. But beforehand, we're going to be sharing a little bit about what Citizens UK is, why we're focusing on weaving trust at the moment, and how we go about doing that, why it's important in the context of the riots. But the recent riots have shown how polarized our communities have become and how quickly innocent people and communities come under attack. Trust between communities and an ability to relate across difference is really critical to avoiding violence and oppression. But how do you create trust, especially when it may have been damaged by the riots? Well, the answer, you weave it. Okay, you weave trust, and we're going to be doing that today. And the other thing I say, if you like doing something with your hands, I can see some people like doing things with their hands, we're actually going to get you to physically weave some symbols of trust with us today. So just before Alison introduces people, I'm going to give a quick handout for people to get going with that. So can you give me a wave if you want to help us weave some trust symbolically, and I'll come and give you some things.
Okay.
In fact, what I should do is I should do this Greenbelt Communion style. I'm going to do it democratically. Okay, I'm going to give you, in these packs, there are some felt weaving bases, and there's also some felt weaving strips. Okay, what I'd like you to do is grab a felt weaving base, whichever colour you prefer, and grab four or five strips of the colours that you'd like to weave together and then pass it on to the next person. I think green belters are capable enough of sorting that out, aren't they? So give a wave when you want the pack passed to you. Can we start at the front there? My brain's dead. And in the meantime, I'm going to hand over to Alison.
Great. Well, good luck with that. There's in the on the citizen stall, we've been inviting people to do that exercise. So there's lots of multicoloured presentations in there already, which is fantastic. So it'll be good to have some more. So I am joined by, firstly, by Tim Norwood.
Hello.
And I'm going to chat to Tim Norwood in a minute. And at a later stage, I'll be joined by Rue Stewart here, who will introduce himself when I invite you up too. So, great. So Tim is with us. Tim, tell us who you are and why you're here.
Yeah, I'm Tim. I used to be a vicar in Milton Keynes. And the reason I'm here is because I've been involved with citizens in Milton Keynes for a number of years. And we kind of piloted this methodology, this thing called Weaving Trust, a number of years ago. And it's really exciting to talk about it because I think it was a really exciting part of our journey, and it's great that other people are doing it elsewhere now.
It's one of those things. Sometimes in citizens, someone somewhere has a brilliant idea, and because we're networked across the country and across chapters, that idea gets to be picked up and replicated and developed, and that's what's happened with Weaving Trust. So, Tim, tell me what was the origin of it? Why did you feel the need for this particular way of connecting with people who are different? Tell us the story of the origin.
Yeah, I mean, there's two kind of strands to that. One is that in Milton Keynes is a relatively new city, but we've got people coming from all over the UK and increasingly all over the world, and we're becoming a more and more diverse and complex city, and the communities are there. They rub up alongside each other, but didn't necessarily know each other very well. So there was a sense in that relationships between different communities, whether it's faith or age, weren't bad. It's not that we weren't fighting each other, we weren't throwing stuff at each other, but they weren't good either. We didn't know each other. So if something happened, we couldn't, we didn't know who to contact, we didn't know who to talk to, we didn't have that kind of network of relationships. And the other thing was a very specific example where along a road, some of our teenagers in one of our schools, they saw an older lady drop her shopping and fall over. And there was a moment where they were looking at her. They were frightened about approaching her because they thought she'd be frightened of them. And she was looking at them thinking, oh, my goodness, I'm not sure I can trust these people. And fortunately, the young people walked across and picked up the bags, and it was lovely, and it was a great moment. But they came back to us and said, look, we've got a problem here, that we have a lack of trust between generations, and we want to do something about it. And so it's out of those two themes that we thought we must do something about this, and that's why we set up the first Weaving Trust project group.
Fantastic. So when you say they came to you, who do you mean?
Yeah, citizens consists of alliances. Usually it will be groups of churches, schools, mosques, synagogues, unions, universities, all sorts of organisations that come together. And so these young people were part of one of the secondary schools that belonged to the Citizens Alliance. And so they had an opportunity for one of our assemblies to say, this is our issue, this is what we're concerned about, what can we do together to address it. That's one of the kind of citizens things.
So it was an actual experience of some real young people in an actual context.
Absolutely.
That led to this response. And maybe I know probably quite a lot of people here are involved in churches, and as you say, may not feel their relationship with the wider community is bad, but may feel, and sometimes churches feel, it's good when it isn't. So tell us a story of maybe how, when a church gets involved in give us an example of a Weaving Trust and how it worked, and maybe a church that felt it helped them connect better.
Yeah, I think I can think of lots of examples, because we ran Weaving Trust events every couple of weeks for a long chunk of time, and they became so popular, people were begging, can you do a Weaving Trust? We want to do a Weaving, because they were exciting. They're not complicated events. I think that's one of the things we learned, is that the power of a Weaving Trust event, as I hope you're going to discover shortly, is it's about ordinary people having conversations about things that are important to them. them. And this idea of a kind of speed dating thing where you get short conversations with people from another community, very different to you. And we just asked one question, which was, what's it like to live here? That's the question we asked over and over again. We tried more complicated questions, but that's the one we asked. And one of the most powerful events, I still vividly remember this event in a church where we had people from the local mosque coming along, and the church was hosting, the mosque was coming, and I remember talking to these two lovely ladies, older ladies from the church, and they said, because I was a vicar at the time, you know, said, yeah, we're a bit nervous about this. It's not really our thing, but because you've asked us and we like you, we're going to come. But we're a bit nervous. And so I said, that's fine. They come in. They came in for this event, and they had lots of short conversations with their Muslim neighbours who they probably seen in the street, but never had a chat with. Mm. And they were really nervous about, well, getting it wrong. Mm. It wasn't that they hated Muslims. It's just that they'd never spoken to any. And they came out. They came out arm in arm with the lovely Kashida, who's one of the kind of Muslim women leaders, and they were talking about cake, and they were walking up, and they were planning things that they were going to do, and they were going to do cake events and bakings, and they were going to, and it's just, you know, watching that transformation. Of course, now they know each other, they can go, oh, we could do this, or we could do that, or let's organise an iftar. What's an iftar? Oh, well, let's do, and just that kind of power explosion of people knowing each other enough to have conversations about things that matter, but it begins with that relational connection, which we really enjoy. I loved a weaving. I mean, I used to love running Weaving Trust events because there's just the energy. Once you start people talking to each other and they go, oh, yeah, can we do more? We want to do more. because we love that kind of thing. We love talking to each other. But sometimes we need something to make the connection.
And the joy of we want to do more, let's face it, is not necessarily the most common experience for those of us who are involved in church activities. So to actually find something that people absolutely want to do more of is worth bottling, really.
Oh, absolutely,
isn't it?
Absolutely.
But that's in a time before. So, of course, then crises happen in the wider world, and we're all part of the whole world geopolitically. So tell me an example of when there has been an issue in the wider world where a Weaving Trust has actually really come into its own.
Yeah, we started the Weaving Trust in Milton Keynes, I think it's probably 2014. And one of the things that happened fairly soon after that was Brexit. And we knew this was going to be an important but also very difficult subject, but we consciously organized an event where we it took some managing, because we basically tried to get together a group of people who were leavers and a group of people who were remainers to have a Weaving Trust event, and we had to be very strict to say, no, we need you to actually believe in this, and so that we could line people up and then do it in a way that encouraged proper conversation on what's important to you, and how it was really worth doing, and demonstrated that we live in silos, and in our silos we just reinforce our idea that there is, as we said this morning at the communion service, there is another who is the enemy, and I need to beat that enemy, and it doesn't matter what I say, but it's all about winning. And the ability to have actual conversations across divides as human beings in a managed way was a really powerful thing. Good but difficult. I think the power of we've experienced the Weaving Trust is it was better to do upstream from a problem. That actually, if you build relationships between communities, when things are calm, then when things go wrong, you've got the relationships to build on, the trust to build on.
Brilliant. Yeah. Tim, thank you so much for sharing those stories with us. Can we thank Tim for his experience, the story? Thank you, Tim. Fantastic. Want to introduce another guest to you now, Rue Stewart. Yeah, Rue Stewart. And Rue works for the United Reformed Church, so I guess this is your home tent. And Rue is responsible for public issues, social justice within the URC, but therefore also the Joint Public Issues Team, which is an ecumenical initiative. So, Rue, invite you to come and share some theological reflection with us.
Thank you very much. Oh, that smattering of polite applause. Wondering what am I going to say. Yes, I work with the Joint Public Issues Team. The Joint Public Issues Team works with the United Reformed Church, the Methodist Church. Any Methodists? Just a few. There we go. And also the Baptists. Yes. Good to see you. We also work with the Church of Scotland. That was, yeah. Okay. You're just wooing for fun. You've heard of Scotland. Yes. All right, good. I'm going to just share a few little thoughts that will maybe help us think theologically about what we're entering into here. It's a very familiar story, but I'm going to cut short. I'm not going to actually go to this story that you probably all will know. It's just a few verses from Luke 10. A lawyer stood up to test Jesus. Teacher, he said, what must I do to inherit eternal life? He said to him, what's written in the law? What do you read there? He answered, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, your mind, your strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. And he said to him, you've given the right answer. Do this and you will live. But wanting to justify himself, he asked Jesus, and who is my neighbor? So I was inspired, and I've just been showered there as well with blessings. I was inspired to see during the riots, maybe you saw this as well. There was inspiration there whenever you looked beyond the carnage. People from a mosque who just went to the kitchen and fried up some burgers and offered them to the very people who had been gathering to attack them. Completely crazy, we would think, with one mind. Completely amazing, we would think, with another mind. Love in the face of hate. Our societies often have rigid structures, rigid social rules about who's in, who's out. Our churches are pretty much the same. We're making judgments, who's in, who's out. It's much easier, faster, simpler, and much more dangerous to dare to suggest that everyone is in and no one's out. That's scary. Offering generosity in the face of violence is disruptive. Some would say ridiculous or naive. But it seems to me to be what our communities and our churches have to do to rebuild trust, is to take those risks. Blaming, finger-pointing hasn't worked. Can we offer a generous response to all those we tend to place on the outside? Who is my neighbor anyway? The imam, the rioter, the protester, the police officer, the far-right politician, the asylum seeker. Can we draw alongside them? Can we actively listen? Can we work for change together in a context of neighborly concern and even love? Is there capacity in our churches to love our neighbor even when it hurts? Love your God with all your heart, your mind, your soul, and your strength, and love your neighbor as yourself. And if you know the rest of the story that Jesus goes on to tell, the story of the Good Samaritan, you remember that those who didn't help were the ones who walked on the other side and kept themselves away. But the one who did help was the one who made sure that they crossed on the same side. So can our churches stop walking on the other side? And can we start walking on the same side as those we've sometimes and often kept on the outside? That's it.
Thank you, Rue. There is some beautiful symbolic trust weaving going on. If you've got one, wave it. This is my rather poor attempt so far. Look, there's some lovely ones going on there. Okay. If anyone hasn't got one of these and wants to have a go at it, give us a wave. And I think Harry at the back has got some spares. You're all helping us symbolically weave trust, and we'll do a bit of a reveal in a moment to explain what it's all about. what we're going to do now is give you a bit of an opportunity before we actually model the Weaving Trust itself, just for you to buzz in pairs, small groups, encourage you to speak in the theme of the session, perhaps to someone you don't know already that's around you. And the question we want you to reflect on, just in kind of 3 or 4 minutes, is what does polarization look like in your community? What does polarization look like in your community? And maybe another way of thinking about it, just reflecting on Rue's reflection, is thinking about our neighbor, thinking about people who are in or out. Who are the people in the out groups in our community that we want to build relationship with? Okay, so we're going to have 4 minutes for you to talk about that around tables. Everybody understand the question? No? Okay, I'll come and speak to you separately now to explain. If everybody else has got it, 4 minutes to have that, and then if anyone wants to come and feedback briefly, we'd love to hear from you, okay? So, go.
I'll come. Too far away.
Okay, who'd like to come and feedback about what polarization looks like in their community? Yeah? Do you want to come forward?
David Bradwell, sorry.
Okay, and your name is?
I talk Steven. To him on a regular basis.
Let's give a round of applause for Stephen. Over to you, Steve.
Yeah, so I'm now at Newcastle University, but previously I lived in Derby, and I lived in a very multicultural inner city area, which had people from across the world. But right next to it, within like only split by a road and a railway, was this very white working class sort of community. The first Reform UK councillors were elected in that ward. So that sort of dichotomy between the two, there was no interchange. And I'm part of Church of England. The Church of England splits into parishes, and so they didn't have any interchange between them church communities either. So I think that's where you see polarisation almost to an extreme.
Thank you, Stephen. What a powerful and sad example there. Anyone else?
And there's another microphone here, if anybody in this area.
Anyone over there near Alison want to share what polarization looks like in their community? Do you want? You're going to go for it?
I'm going to go for it. Thank you for the explanation.
Yeah, like you're eating an ice cream.
It's bad for me.
Tasteless.
So you gave us an explanation. So I came up with a scenario of like, we're sitting at the table together and chilling, but I'm actually 56 years old, 57. I know, it's unbelievable. 57, I know. Don't tell anyone at work. Don't tell anyone at work. And you're 24 years old. And the scenario is I'm getting on the bus, and I'm standing up on the bus, and I'm thinking, I longed out work, I'm shattered. And you're sitting down on a chair, and I'm looking at you thinking, these young people, what are they like? Can't they see that I need? And so your answer...
They can do.
So your answer what?
So my answer would have been, if she's had a long day at work, and also me too, I'm tired as well, so we feel the same. Who needs a seat more, me or her? So I think, as a polite person, I am. Yet had a long day at work, I thought, yeah, I'll give up my seat and just give it to her. So I thought, you know, she needs it more than I do, and I can stand, you know. So I thought, not saying you can't, but you know, you might need it more than I do. So I thought, here you go, have my seat, there you go.
Fantastic. If you only had more people like you.
So we feel it's about politeness. It's about me being having the confidence to ask.
Mm-hmm.
And is it Vicky? Vicky being open-minded enough to consider my situation. Yeah. So it's perspectives.
And that, I mean, you guys were able, you don't know each other already, right? This is not a setup, everybody. So you had the courage to be able to have a conversation about that right now. But I'm guessing that's partly because you've got a degree of trust, not necessarily in each other, but in the fact that you're in Greenbelt, you're in a space that is, you know, you can hopefully trust that, you know, there's not going to be a violent response or whatever. That's more difficult if you're in a public space, you don't know each other at all, you're on a bus and so on. And this is where the connection between trust and relationship comes to the fore. And why for us, there isn't really an alternative in terms of building trust other than to build and develop more relationships. And that really is our encouragement to you. And what we're going to focus the rest of the session on is how do you go about building those relationships, particularly with people who are different from you, and that you might not have another opportunity to kind of connect to. And that's where the Weaving Trust comes in. Has people got their little Weaving Trust things? Now, I said there'd be a bit of a reveal. Look at that. Beautiful. Really beautiful. These are going to... We're going to, by the way, create these and put them on the back of our tent to spell out Weaving Trust in massive letters. So thank you for contributing to that. I want you to imagine that the felt base is your community. Okay? The place in which you're living. And I want you to imagine that each of the little strands, okay, is a relationship or is a person who is different from you in some way. And what it would be like if you, following Greenbelt over the next couple of months, were to just intentionally try and build 4 or 5 new relationships with people who are different from you. And you might think, well, what difference in a community of 3,000, 5,000, 10,000, 50,000, 100,000, 8 million, how much of a difference is 5 relationships going to make? Well, imagine if it wasn't only you doing that, but everybody in your church or your community organization or your school was also doing the same thing, that you were increasing the number of relationships you had in your locality 5-fold, even just in a couple of months. How would that strike people? Would that be a good thing for our communities if people, if when you got on the bus, it was that much more likely that you might know who the person was because you'd maybe connected with them before? Sounds like common sense. The problem is then, well, but how do we go about doing that? Because, you can use your noggin, but even with your noggin and with your politeness and so on, you can't just go up to people randomly saying, can I have a relationship with you? I mean, you can, but probably you're going to get some odd responses. Okay, and this is where the Weaving Trust model comes in. It's super simple. Any organization can do this. So it isn't an institutional idea. The idea is you do it as part of your church or your school or your mosque or your trade union branch or as your community group. And the idea is that organizations host it. So let's say your church hosted it and you brought 10 people from your congregation to participate. What you then do is ask other organizations in that community, particularly encouraging you to engage communities that perhaps you knew less well or that you had fewer relational connections with, to match those 10. So they don't have to bring 10 each, but let's say you brought 5 other organizations who are going to participate in the Weaving Trust. If you do your maths, they just have to bring 2 people, okay, 2 people each, and then you'd have 10 from the church and 10 from those other community organizations. And that's how you do with the Weaving Trust. And then a couple of months later, maybe one of those other organizations hosts the Weaving Trust. They bring 10, and then the other organizations involved bring 2, or whatever the numbers. The point is you've got to have equal numbers of people coming, and the idea is you have half the people from an organization where people kind of know each other already, although to be honest, in my church, I think we could probably do with a Weaving Trust inside our church first, because there's a whole bunch of people who still don't know their names, despite the fact that they've been worshipping together for 10 or 15 years. But really the point is to do it externally, okay? So let's stop talking. Let's give it a go. Let's have some volunteers who are up for being part of this. You won't have to do... Nobody have to hear what you're doing. Okay, but we need 2 circles of people to come in the front here. If we can move the chairs out, if Alison and Tim and people could help us with this a little bit. And what we're going to do is you're going to have short 4-minute conversations with people that you don't know. Okay, and then we're going to stop them, have a bit of feedback, see how they went, just so you can see how easy it is to actually begin to weave that trust and how quick it is. But we can't do it unless we've got some people. So who's up for getting involved? If you can come forward, that'd be great. Let's give these guys a round of applause. I'll move. That's a bit of a muted round of applause for people who are... Okay, so what we need is we need you to form 2 circles. An inner circle that's facing outwards, okay? And then an outer circle facing inwards. So you've got a pair. Imagine you were doing folk dancing. This is an interesting circle, guys. Yeah, Tim's getting involved. Okay. Has everybody got a partner? Yeah? Right. Yeah, has everybody got a pair? The reason we're doing this in a circle, I appreciate it doesn't work terribly well in this space, is because at a certain point we're going to move everybody around, okay, like it is a Kaylee or whatever, and you swap partners at various points. Okay, everybody in the circle, can you hear me? Okay, so your first question is, and you've got 4 minutes to have this conversation, is what do you love about your community? Okay, what do you love about your community? And you got 4 minutes. Go. Okay, and that is time. Okay, how was that? Yeah, you're getting into it. What was that impossibly hard to have a conversation with a stranger? No. Anyone want to offer some reflections? How was it? Good. Thumbs up. Yeah. Yeah. Kind of easy to do. Yeah. Okay. Fine. Well, let you know, we don't need to make it any more complicated than that. No sort of match of the day style analysis needed. So the next stage of the weaving trust is that people move. Oh, by the way, can I ask? Did you? I forgot to prompt you to do this. Did you introduce yourself to the other person at the start? So did you say what your names were? So I'm going to give you an extra 20 seconds just to share your names and where you're from. I should have said that right at the beginning. So. You've done that. Okay, lovely. So what I want now is the inner circle, stay where you are. I want the outer circle to move clockwise two people. Okay? So move two people clockwise. Yeah, two people clockwise. Two people clockwise. I think you need to go around. Keep moving. Yeah. Okay. So now... point, note to self, when I say introduce yourselves and say who you are and where you're from. And then the question I want you to answer this time is, so before you asked what do you love about your community, now I want you to answer what would you love to change about your community, okay? Both of you. Yeah, yeah, both of you. What would you love to change about your community? And I'm going to give you 5 minutes for this one, so we'll slightly increase the time, okay? So introduce yourselves, and then what would you love to change about your community? Everybody understand the question? Yeah, go. Okay. Okay. Trust weavers. I'm really sorry to bring those conversations to a close, but we're going to need to, just because of time. So just what I was observing there is, you know, you were talking about things you'd like to change, which is another way of saying, like, what do you hate about your community, isn't it? You know, but we framed it. But, you know, so there may be some heavy things shared. And what I could see was lots of sad faces, low energy, angry voices. It seemed a real... not at all. Yeah, what I saw was lots of conversation, animation, humor. Well, people were smiling and laughing anyway, so I'm assuming someone was saying something funny. And people seem to be enjoying the connection. It's good to talk. Yeah, it's good to talk. And interestingly, when we did this yesterday, because we did it at the Rebel Rouser venue with my colleague Juliet Kilpin, who's much more skilled at facilitating these than I am, we had a gentleman come in at the end and say, I'm an introvert, and actually I find it quite difficult to have these sorts of conversations, but this made it safe and easy for me to do. Because everybody was doing it, I didn't have everybody watching me, and I could connect one-to-one with a person, which is kind of what I like doing, mainly, if I have to relate to people. I mean, he didn't say this, but... so this can be a great way of enabling lots of different people to do this. Young children could do it. You know, they could be thinking about who are the people in their school or their community groups or youth groups or scouts or whatever it is, or their football teams or their netball groups, whatever it might be, they can connect in... that way. So we're going to give you one final question before we finish. And we're going to ask you to move around two in the same direction. So I think I asked you to do clockwise before, didn't I? Yeah, outer circle, move clockwise, yeah. It's no good if both inner circles do it, because then you're just with the same people. So move two around, okay. Hopefully you won't be with the same people that you started with. Okay. All right, everybody got somebody? Again, introduce yourself, so who you are, where you're from. So you ready for the question? You ready for the question? The question, okay, this massive enthusiasm for the question here. The question here is, if you were organising, let's say your group, your church, whatever community group you're part of, was hosting one of these weaving trusts, okay? You probably can think about maybe the 10 people you'd bring on your side. But who would you like to invite to come that you don't know already? Which are the types of groups? Some of them might be very formal, but perhaps groups that you don't know. Others might be just types of people in a community that you're not connected to yet, but who are the sorts of groups and people that you don't know so well? And maybe if we want to think about it theologically, linking back to what Rue was saying, do you remember he talked about loving our neighbour, talked about the fact that Jesus said that just before telling the story of the Good Samaritan? I think sometimes as Christians we're really good at serving the serving the person who's been beaten up on the roadside when we can see them. We're maybe less good at thinking and connecting with the people who are not obviously in our face and in need. And actually what we're talking about here in terms of building trust is doing things at a time when there isn't crisis. So who are people not necessarily beaten up on the side of the road, but that maybe we can't even see or don't even see in our community? We kind of know they're there, but they're not maybe visible to us because we live in a particular bubble. Steve talked to us earlier about how in communities we can live in bubbles, and sounded even like the church systems there was sort of serving to silo different communities off from one another. Who are the people that we really have to work hard to go and relate to and connect to in our communities? And it could be a very small group of people, it could be a very new group of people, it could be a very long established group of people, it could be the group of people who are continually ignored over time. But who would we be excited to invite to be part of a weaving trust in our community? And I'm going to give you 4 minutes to do that. Go. Okay. Does anyone want to really briefly share how that experience was for you and how you would feel about doing that kind of a thing back in your own context? Does it sort of feel doable or completely impossible? Doable. Does anyone want to say anything about...
I'm here from Canada and I've been looking for tools and I think this is a spectacular tool. So thank you.
Brilliant. Anyone else very quickly want to feedback? Anyone? No? But broadly...
Yeah, it's great. I also think that it's quite versatile. I'm imagining just saying, say, in my work, place of work, if there's an issue, well, why don't we kind of have a quick speed dating, you know, because actually even in communities you know really well, if there's a problem, how are we going to get around that problem and sort of share it as a group within an organisation? But for the community side, I mean, great. I just think it's a wonderful way of, you know, because actually we all took in and listened. I think that's the other thing, is we're not just talking, we're actually listening in a very authentic way. And I don't know if anyone else found this, but I found that actually most people's issues that they wanted to change in their community, they were pretty much the same. You know, all boiled down for us to the kind of sort of young people, vulnerable people, you know, and that was quite an eye-opener as well. But anyway, sorry, I'll be quiet now.
That's great. So they can be a great way of finding commonality. They can also be a way, of course, of finding difference. And that's one of the things that we do when we do these formally. We do some training at the beginning, which teaches people how to deal with difference. So if somebody says something that you find really challenging, you might feel really strongly, or part of your belief system is suddenly challenged by what somebody says about them or what they think. And the instinct of a society these days, particularly on things like social media, is to attack, you know, or if you don't, or cancel. Yeah, do not engage with people who are different from you or believe different things. And one of the things that we teach in this, I mean, obviously within particular boundaries, if somebody is actively hostile, you know, but if just somebody says something, and the great example of this, when we did this in Southend, was when a mosque was hosting, and one of the groups that came alongside was Southend Pride. And beforehand, the facilitator said, look, you may well hear things today that will be challenging to you and who you are and what you believe and so on. And we encourage you... unless you really want to, don't get into theological or whatever political debate about stuff. Learn about the other person and listen, and see what relationship it's possible to build. And if someone says something challenging, maybe just say something like, thank you for sharing that and for giving me the opportunity to learn about you. and move on. What happens in the first interaction? A middle-aged gentleman from the mosque sits down with a young white woman who'd come from Southend Pride. They were starting up the conversation. The guy from the mosque said, "Well, you're really welcome to the mosque. Who did you come with today?" And she said, "I came with my wife." Okay. And he said afterwards, I'd never met a woman who had a wife before. And I didn't know how to react. And for a minute, I was kind of panicking, because am I going to sort of like feel like I need to fully affirm that, which I'm not sure I'm comfortable to do right at the minute, because I'm not sure where my faith sits with me on that. On the other hand, I don't want to be rude either, particularly. And so he remembered back to the training at the beginning and said, "Thank you for sharing that with me and for allowing me to share to learn more about you." The conversation moved on, and it turned out they had, I can't remember exactly what it is, but something about Southend that they really had in common. So this is the other thing. We can allow our differences, and I don't want to diminish the importance of those differences for either of those people. And it isn't all going to be rosy in the garden necessarily all the time. But we aren't only our differences. And actually having mechanisms to enable us to move on from that can be really helpful. Let's give our volunteers a huge round of applause. Thank you so much. We are coming to the end now, but we're going to invite Rue up for a quick thing about how you can get more involved in the Joint Public Issues team and their work at local level. Sorry? Yeah, I'm going to do that at the end. And then I'm going to do a final little thing about how you can get involved in Weaving Trust Dava. So, Rue, over to you.
Oh, doesn't matter. It's cool. There was a slide, but I've now turned my computer off by accident. So the Joint Public Issues team is trying to develop a network of churches all around the country, at least 632 churches around the country. Does anyone know why the number 632 is important? It's the number of constituencies in Scotland, England, and Wales. So we want to have at least 632 churches that are networked together that can develop a meaningful relationship with their MP. We think that MPs are really important. They're not the only people who make decisions in our local areas, but they're really important people to develop a meaningful relationship with. I've already talked to a URC congregation who are in the same constituency as one of the Reform Party's new MPs, and they're like, "What do we say to our MP? What can we actually communicate with on and build a relationship on, because we disagree about so many things?" Let's get them into one of these circles. Let's see what they can find that they can connect with. But we want to connect as many churches as possible together. It doesn't just have to be that many. It could be more than that if we can. To actually share that knowledge, share that learning, to enable each of us to have those relationships with MPs which make a difference. With a huge majority in Westminster at the minute, the Labour Party, will be, if they decide to do something, it'll be very difficult for any other parties to maybe vote against them and lots of different things. And so for us as people in our churches, if we do want to move things in Parliament in a particular way, or move our laws, or move how we do things and our policies, it's really important that we have that relationship with all of our MPs, not just thinking about the party which is in charge, or the parties in power, but all of our MPs. So we'd really love you to be involved in that. If you'd like to find out more, talk to me, or look at our website, jpit.uk/CAN, which is CAN, or Constituency Action Network. There it is. And we have two, thank you, we have two webinars coming up at the end of this month and the start of September. You can come and join those, find out a little bit about it, and it'll be awesome. All right, is that okay? So what's it called? The Constituency Action Network. And please be part of it. Thank you.
Thank you, Rue. Let's give a massive thanks to Rue. Also to the United Reformed Church for hosting all of our sessions this week. We're hugely grateful to you all. Let's give a round of applause to those guys and to the Joint Public Issues team as a whole. So, final quick thing from me. If you're interested in this and want to find out more, we have published a report with the University of Sydney. You might say, why have we gone all the way to Australia to do this? Because Amanda Tattersall, who is one of the leading academic practitioners of community organising, which is kind of the model we use at Citizens, is based there. And she collaborated with us on this report called Organising Together Across Different Relational Experiments in Community Organising. And at the back, it has a whole appendix on how to do a weaving trust. Okay. Have a great rest of Greenbelt. And thanks to Alison and to Tim as well for their contributions today.
Thanks so much for listening to this recorded talk. Explore our full Greenbelt Festival Talks archive with almost 20 years of recorded talks and podcasts for free at greenbelt.org.uk/talks.